Let's start what we have come into the room to do. Right on. Here goes.
Welcome, welcome to WCBN FM 88.3 on your dial. This is It's Hot in Here, the environmental talk and music show, coming at you on Friday afternoons from 12 to 1. Your hosts today are in studio. It's me, Rebecca Harden. Been here before. Since 2008, we've been doing this show. But this fall, we've got some exciting new hosts on board, and I wanted to just let you all know a little bit about Pearl, Becca, Dania, in studio with me today. I'll be introducing each of them and what they do, as well as talking with some other guests on campus who've been doing engaged learning through working in the world with organizations on environmental and social issues. We're going to be talking on the phone and in person with people doing active learning and hearing about how that relates to a better training for environmental professionals, activists, and ecologists in the world today. So stay tuned, and thanks for your attention. What we've got queued up for you today are a series of songs about teaching and learning and about energy for the start of the semester here. So I want us to listen to a few tunes, and we'll go back and forth between talking tunes for the hour like we always do about this time. Let's hear a tune about teaching. Baby, Welcome back to It's Hot In Here, WCBN FM 88.3, Ann Arbor, and the world. We hope you're listening. And that includes Andrea Krauss, our co-host, who's somewhere out west today between Arizona, and we hope she'll be back with us in studio next broadcast. Jennifer Johnson, one of the founders of this show, is currently sitting in New Haven, Connecticut, the Elm City, on a postdoctoral fellowship after completing her dissertation on fisheries in Lake Victoria, Uganda, Kenya, and Tanzania. Sarah Swick, another founder of this show, is currently the reporter for Detroit, working with Michigan Radio, and many of you hear her when you listen to Michigan Radio. We're proud of the way this show brings the world to campus and takes our students out into the world to work on communication and education and energy around environment. That's positive energy. Let's hear a little bit from our new hosts. I'd like to just draw some of you out so that you can meet our listeners. Let's start with you, Becca. You're a student at the School of Natural Resources and Environment. You want to tell us about what track you're in and where you came from? And
yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me as part of the show. I'm happy to be here and I'm happy to be a part of WCBN FM. So, my name is Becca Baylor, and I will be one of your hosts for this upcoming season. I am currently studying at the School of Natural Resources. I'm getting my degree particularly in behavior education and communication. So that's my track. And my focus is on creating a more sustainable food system. I'm very interested in connecting stakeholders that are interested in doing that, particularly those interested in food processing. So that's what I did a little bit in my internship this summer in Detroit.
Fantastic. So that's working on food availability and also on some of the ways that organizations in Detroit can link with each other. I would love to hear more about that in just a minute. But before we go into more detail on your summer experiences and indeed the way that working in the world can be an educational experience, let's hear also from Pearl. Pearl, welcome to IHIH.
Thank you.
Tell us about yourself, Pearl.
Hi, everyone. I'm Pearl. I'm from China. And Pearl is actually my English name, and it's my Chinese name's English meaning. And I'm here from School of Natural Resources and Environment. My track is Behavior Education and Communication, and also Environmental Policy. So my interest is mainly about climate change preparation, especially on its educational and communication side of it. And I'm really interested in how to effectively communicate with either the private sector, the governmental officials, and also the public.
Pearl, that's fantastic. That's absolutely fantastic. How long have you actually been here in the States?
For a year.
That's
yeah,
great.
And I really want to say that I'm really, really excited to join It's Hot In Here family, and I am so looking forward to spend the next hour with all of you having fun here.
Fantastic. Let me remind our listeners that that Hot In Here family is not just on the air. We are online as well at www.hotinhere.us, and or as we like to say, hotinhere.us, and it is hot in here. Even today, on a kind of a surprisingly cool day. Let's move to Dania. Dania, welcome back, because you were with us actually last year, if I recall, during a fantastic show with some local landscape architects that were working on native species in lawns and public spaces in Ann Arbor. And if I recall, you were talking about a very cool project that you're working on in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Tell us more.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me back. I'm really excited to be a co-host this season. Last year, those couple of runs we had went over pretty well, so I'm back for more.
Fantastic. And what is the project in Baltimore all about? Just briefly, we'll get into it more later.
Yeah, so the project in Baltimore is working on their urban forestry management project. The city of Baltimore is looking to expand their urban canopy, and what we're trying to do is create this tool that will help them make the best decisions for tree plantings within the next 20, 30 years, and mostly focus on how climate change is going to impact those tree planting decisions.
Fantastic. I know that's happening all over the place. I've heard rumors about Chicago planting sweet gum trees. Is it true? Find out this and more later in our show. Stick with us. Don't touch that dial. But let me just complete my introductions briefly by bringing in our engineer, Tex, who, while not on the mic, is in the booth spinning tunes for us. He's part DJ, part engineer today, and he's given us a soundtrack that's all about learning and teaching and positive energy on environmental issues, which we all know can seem so doom and gloom. That is not what this show is about. This show is about really good work and having a really good time doing it. So let's hear a little bit more music now that we know who's on the mic, and we'll be back with a lot more to talk about shortly. Tex, take it away. Welcome back, everyone, to It's Hot in Here, the environmental talk and music show hosted here at WCBN-FM 88.3. I'm Rebecca Harden here with my co-hosts, Dania, Pearl, and Becca. And we have a guest who's just come into the studio to talk with us about his work in the world this summer. Nat Lichten, a master's student at the School of Environment and Natural Resources, was working this summer with the World Resources Institute. Welcome, Nat.
Thank you, Rebecca.
We want to thank you for coming in today and let you know that we've already been talking a bit with our listeners about a move that's not only happening in the School of Environment, but all over campus, which is a move to make the learning experience more dynamic, more hands-on, more experiential, more engaged. So internships, you know, long a kind of thing you do on the side, are becoming a more and more crucial part of how we learn. And we would love to talk to you about what yours was like this summer. Where were you and what were you doing, Nat?
Yeah, so I was in Washington, D.C., and like you said, I was working for the World Resources Institute, which is an environmental policy think tank, essentially. And I was looking at ways to use forests to protect clean drinking water supplies, but more specifically kind of looking at the factors that have gotten cities and water utilities to decide to restore or protect forests for their drinking water benefits.
Sounds like kind of a Michigan issue. I mean, Michigan is definitely a water state with a lot of forests, and we are mindful of that, especially today, given that there is a summit going on in Lansing today, an environmental justice summit that links grassroots organizations from both urban and rural areas across the state to learn from each other about clean environments and the connections between a clean environment in a city and the sort of hinterlands, right, that surround it. I think those are really interesting issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a major theme of my summer, for sure. I think, you know, really thinking about ways to encourage folks in the city to value those lands and also value the role that people living in more rural areas play as caretakers and managers of those lands.
I'm very interested in the engage the folks part, mm-hmm. because it's a very, very important part of making decisions. So could you please talk a little bit more about that? Who are the stakeholders you're engaging, and what are the strategies you were using?
Yeah, so I was really looking at ways that that this was done in different communities across the country. And I think we went into the project really thinking of water utilities as the main stakeholder, and thinking that they would primarily be engaged around kind of economic arguments. So saying you should put money into forests because you won't have to build that next water treatment plant, or you won't have to put in that filtration system. And I was really excited to learn that, you know, that discourse was definitely going on. That conversation was definitely going on, but it was a part of a much larger conversation happening in communities. You know, engaging water users, engaging folks in the environmental communities, engaging planners, people who recreate in forests, really about what the forests mean to the municipality, what it means economically, but also in terms of identity and culture, and then what responsibilities go along with that meaning.
So you kind of frame your message towards different audiences when you are reaching out to them?
Yeah, I would say that's a strategy. And then, you know, to do it really, really transparently, though. So to say, you know, I know you care about this forest because it's where you go hunt, or it's where you go do X, Y, or Z activity. But there are other people in your community who value, and other institutions in your community that value the forest for different reasons. And, you know, there's a need to protect the forest, and you can all pitch in to accomplish things that you might not be able to accomplish just acting on the value that you hold.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. One thing I'd love to ask based on that point, I know you're really interested in collaborative management. Was this an opportunity to figure out how these separate groups could collaborate? Did you come up with strategies for that kind of engagement?
You know, it's hard for me to say, because I definitely saw examples that were incredibly inspiring. It's definitely something I'm coming up against right now, is the challenge of generalizing based on a few specific cases. Right. So I hesitate to say that we saw any kind of hard and fast rules. But there were some, you know, Flagstaff, Arizona, and Santa Fe, New Mexico come to mind as two communities that had a really rich history of collaborative forest management. So really had been doing a lot of, you know, just grassroots organizing, going out, talking to people, building relationships, creating spaces and organizations that bring representatives of lots of different communities together so they can really talk to each other and get to know each other and understand each other's interests. And they, you know, they had been doing this in both of those communities since the 1990s. And that really showed more recently as those communities worked to find ways to really respond to catastrophic wildfire that posed significant threats to their water supplies. So they kind of already had that community capacity, that organizing capacity in place. So I think, yeah, great for them. Also, maybe a direction that some other folks, right, you know, should pursue.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to do, and it does seem sometimes like the Washington community of experts and professionals can feel kind of cut off from those front lines. And I wonder, you know, I mean, my experience is that when you're moving around in a place like Washington, D.C. on environmental issues, A, you do meet a lot of Wolverines. I mean, there's a big network. Am I right? I mean, I don't know, yeah. Dania, even Baltimore, right?
Were you? Yeah, they were all over. We were all over. Everywhere.
And I don't know if you also had the experience of meeting and working with folks who had come out of these kinds of educational institutions, but how I imagine there's also some real frustration and real effort to make better connections. And I know that one of our radio shows last year was a team of students from the school working on an environmental justice atlas. Mm-hmm. And I would point all of us and the listeners to that wonderful archive on our website, www.hotinhere.us. If you want to pull up some of the conversations we've had in this studio with people working in the world, that atlas was cataloging environmental conflicts all over the world. And our students here in Ann Arbor were working on the U.S.-based ones. But those kinds of tools for even figuring out, like, where are the front lines and who's defining them, I think are really interesting. I think it might be great to take another tune here in a minute and think with some music about these challenges. But we will be back on the mic very shortly and talking more about the questions that really matter when the rubber hits the road and you want to make a difference in the world on environmental issues like water quality and forest conservation. So stick with us and let's hear another track from Tex.
Children, I take some good advice. I'm going to tell you something now, don't make me say it twice. You can put away your lessons, throw away your books, cause I'm going to tell you what cooks. Venus was a woman who had a lot of charms, but she got so much hugging, she wore out both her arms. But you don't learn that in school. You don't learn that in school. There ain't no doubt about it. You don't learn that in school. Napoleon was a soldier, the smartest ever seen. But he learned his maneuvers alone with Josephine. But you don't learn that in school. You don't learn that in school. There ain't no doubt about it. You don't learn that in school. One thing you should know, he only robbed the rich folks cause the poor folks had no dough. But you don't learn that in school. You don't learn that in school. There ain't no doubt about it. You don't learn that in school. King Arthur was a hero, his fame was everywhere. He had a big round table cause he couldn't stand a square. But you don't learn that in school.
You don't learn that in school.
Welcome back to It's Hot in Here, the environmental talk and music show, grooves and news for a green planet with soul. So this is Rebecca Hardin, and I'm in the studio with my new co-hosts, Danya, Pearl, and Becca. We're talking with our guest, Nat, about the way it feels when you flip that classroom open, step out of it into the world, and try to take the book learning to real problems. Nat's come back from a stint with the World Resources Institute as an intern this summer. And I think it's only fair, given that he's sitting in the studio being peppered with questions, that we not only flip the classroom, but flip the studio and let Nat ask us hosts a few questions, because I happen to know that some of us were involved in internships this summer, too. Nat, what would you like to know from us?
Yeah, well, I think just to start, I'd love to hear what you each did with your summer, where you were working, what you did.
Okay. How about Pearl?
Yeah, so I really like what Rebecca just said, that there's really excitement when we flip the book textbook and go into real world, because although I'm a master's student, but I came here directly after undergrad, so I don't have any real professional experience out there. And this summer I did an internship on my master's project, and that was about preparing the Great Lakes municipalities about the happening climate change. And we were developing training modules and case studies, and one of the case studies I really want to mention about is we went to Milwaukee and did an interview there, and that interview happened in the Milwaukee metropolitan sewage system. And we interviewed the executive director, whose name is Kevin Schaefer, and he's actually a very, very good leader, and just like what Nat just talked about, like bring mutual interest, bring people together. He's a leader that can bring different perspective together and develop kind of a vision for the community and share that and engage people into the vision. So when taking actions, all the voices are being heard. And
Pearl, yeah, that is fantastic. And speaking of hearing voices, I want to interrupt this broadcast of everybody's summer plans to say that we have a live caller from Lansing, Michigan, speaking of Great Lakes municipalities and reaching out to people. We've got a call in from the Environmental Justice Summit in Lansing today, and I would love to take that call and hear from them. Let's take a caller. Hello, you're on the air. This is the It's Hot in Here host team. What's happening up there in Lansing?
Hi, this is Ely Wu, and I'm up here at the Environmental Justice Summit representing Citizens for Oil-Free Backyards, which is a brand new group just formed this year to fight against oil and gas intrusion in Scioto Township, outside Ann Arbor. And we are so thrilled to be here. And I have to tell you, I am so inspired by all the stories that I've been hearing by longtime activists in the field who have been just pushing ahead and trying to change legislation and trying to build infrastructure and networks to advance the cause of environmental justice. And it's so inspiring to talk to everyone. And we've just had a bunch of plenary talks. And I'm really looking forward to networking with everyone in the afternoon.
Fantastic. Ely Wu, thank you so much for the call-in. And let me just remind our listeners that if they would like to learn more about Oil-Free Backyards as an organization emerging from the Scioto Township and Ann Arbor perimeter here, but networking with other organizations across the state, they can listen to a broadcast from last May on this show when we had your director, Laura, and several concerned citizens in the studio talking about the struggles over mineral rights right here in our own backyards and how the backyard moment transfers into much bigger challenges about governance and rights and access. I think it's so exciting what you all are doing. Now, are you presenting a poster up there about your organization?
Yes, we are going to have a poster. Our poster is up right now in the hall where everyone is listening to talk, and we'll have a formal poster session this afternoon where I'll get to explain to people who are interested a little more about what we're doing and most importantly, how we can help other communities who may either now or in the future be facing similar challenges from the attempts of oil and gas industries to expand into their areas as well. And also they've invited all of us to give a little presentation about ourselves to the whole group, and I'm really looking forward to that as well.
It sounds like we have got the right person for the job up there from the Oilfield Rack Yards team today. You sound really excited and dynamic. Now, you said the posters are up in the hall. What hall is that? Are you all, am I right that you're meeting in a Baptist church in Lansing today? Tell us about what it feels like to be there. How is it?
I'm actually calling you from the chapel, looking at this beautiful stained glass window, which shows the sun, and I think it's so appropriate that we're talking about environment, and I'm sitting in this wonderful contemplative space. It's a very large church, and we're in a very large meeting hall. It's absolutely spacious and grand, and we're so lucky that they let us have this space. And so we're all sitting around at tables, and there are posters and exhibits from all different groups around, and then the speakers at the front and, you know, projecting their presentations up. And we have these breaks where we're encouraged to talk to everyone at our table, and I've just met so many interesting people, people who are working on their dissertations in environmental justice, people who are working in transportation, and just everyone in between.
That is fantastic. I do want to just remind our listeners that we are talking about an EJ Summit for the state of Michigan that's unfolding in Lansing today. I believe it culminates with a dinner tonight that's the theme of the dinner, if I'm not mistaken, is Activists Activate. And it's about really sharing energy and sharing knowledge and sharing a meal and information. I think it sounds like this particular summit is starting small with experienced organizations and active organizations, really teaching and learning from each other, but it wants to catalyze much broader conversations and bring people into these movements across the state, help people get educated and get active on the issues that are going to affect them and their children and their landscapes for generations to come in Michigan and beyond. So it must be really exciting. I want to thank you so much for your call, and I want to invite you and your organization to get with us here at Hot in Here and schedule another time to be here in the studio with us, telling us more about updates from the front lines as you build these bridges to other organizations in the state and beyond our state in the United States right now on these issues of mining and fracking and citizens figuring all of that out. I really appreciate your time. I guess we should let you get back to that poster presentation, huh?
Yes, and thank you so much for taking my call and giving me the chance to share it with your listeners that this is really a wonderful moment and where we're stopping to think about, you know, what we can do to protect the environment for all of us in all our backyards. I'm really glad that I had a chance to talk with you all.
Well, and let me reassure you that, as we always do every week, when we get off the air today, we will work on an MP3 file of this conversation and a blog that will have links to your organization, to the organizations our students in the studio are talking about, and also to the EJ Summit for people who want more information about what was going on up there and how they can get involved in the next one. So thanks again for your call. Good luck with the poster, and keep your head up.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Back to our studio guests after that very, very exciting call from Lansing, and I want to really thank our collaborators in the field for keeping it fresh here on It's Hot in Here. We were just talking with Pearl about her work at municipal levels with Great Lakes communities, municipalities, on how to deal with adaptation and changes in the lakes. And she was talking about how jazzed she was about the energy from some of the civic leaders and experts, right? You were really feeling like there was vision and practical strategies coming out of these places, right?
Yeah, and I just want to give a little reflection about the call. And I mean, the energy about sharing is like really a great idea about all the events going on. And the purpose of us on our master's project doing case study is also that we want to share it. We want to share lessons learned so that other municipalities or other communities can take these lessons and see whether they can duplicate or whether there's something they can learn to inform their own practices. And yeah, I think that's what I want to talk about. How about you, Becca? What did you do during the summer?
Thank you, Pearl. Yeah, so speaking of this concept of sharing and community engagement at all levels, thank you, Pearl. My internship also had a level of sharing to it. I was working in Detroit with an organization called Food Lab, and I was working specifically to improve policy for licensing for businesses that were working out of shared use kitchens, entrepreneurs working out of shared, often underutilized spaces in order to promote their businesses, anything from organic bakers to locally sourced energy bars to businesses and entrepreneurs that have been working out of their basements for 30 years but have been struggling to get through the licensing process. So my internship was wonderful, and it also throughout the whole time carried the same emphasis on sharing, on community, and expanding education, not only in the classroom but in different realms of our world.
I think everybody should also know that Becca is sitting across from me wearing a t-shirt that says Leaders and Beats. Not Leaders and Best, but Leaders and Beats.
Leaders.
So this whole food thing, people, you are what you eat. And to be the leaders and best, you do need your beats. And so that's going to be a theme we'll come back to. Listen, we have got call-ins from all over the place today. We have another caller on the line who himself has been working outside of the classroom. And I mean outside. This is a guy who does a lot of work with bees and trees, and he's going to talk to us a little bit, I think, about some opportunities that are coming up this weekend. If you want to get out of the classroom and get a hands-on experience, can we have a call from Pete Whitten about what's going on with plants and bees and outdoor learning this weekend? Pete, welcome to It's Hot in Here.
Hi, how are you doing?
It's great to hear from you. We're all doing great, but it is a little hot in here.
So, it's been hot for a while.
It has. It's cooling off now. What's going on this weekend? Tell us about what's happening with pollination and plants, and what's up.
So I'm a landscape architecture student in the School of Natural Resources at U of M Ann Arbor, and I got a grant from Mathai Botanical Gardens, which is 5 miles east of downtown Ann Arbor. They wanted me to be able to design and install a pollinator sanctuary garden at the campus farm, which was originally an idea from the UMBs group that I'm also a part of. And that group also has a couple hives out at the botanical garden on the same site. So what we're doing on Sunday is that we're finally planting all the prairie wildflowers and grasses and a couple interesting shrubs to span the greatest length of the growing season and provide pollinators and also predatory insects and other beneficial insects that can help out at the campus farm to give them both some forage and some habitat, but mainly just to show people the wide diversity of native plants that we have that already support a great resource of pollinators that are native to the Midwest.
Yes, Pete, can you tell us what time that event is going on, the planting's going on, and potentially how people could get involved with helping?
Yeah, so Mathai Botanical Gardens is on Dixborough Road, and we're going to be there at the campus farm, which is visible from the road at the service entrance to the Botanical Gardens, from 10 to 1 on Sunday. Okay. And so I have some information that can be sent out to people, although I'm not sure how to do that. If someone's interested, they could email umishbees at umich.edu, and that'll come to all the UMBs so they could get some help in figuring out. We've got a carpool list and all that, and also, a list of things to bring, like water and closed-toed shoes. But mainly, it's a chance to meet a lot of other people who are interested in helping pollinators, and not only the honeybee, but all part of the 20,000 pollinators that are native to North America. And just to be able to have a hand in something that's up and coming and really, really important.
Fantastic, Pete. And maybe just a few words before we let you go and head back to a tune, because we like to balance that talk and tune thing on this show, about why it's so important to help pollinators. I know that we did a show on this, a whole hour, talking with U of MB's rep Mike Bianco, who has since been out in Tanzania and other parts of the world looking at beekeeping worldwide in terms of what we call bee colony collapse and a pollinator crisis. Can you just say a couple words about why this isn't just a good idea for a Sunday morning outside, but why it's an urgent call to action?
Yeah, this is really urgent because we're at a time in our agricultural history where we've seen the destructive effects of neonicotinoid pesticides and the result of Roundup herbicides that are actually affecting a lot of our native pollinator populations, one charismatic pollinator being the monarch that's getting a lot of press these days. But we rely on pollinators, not only honeybees, a lot of other insects like ants and wasps and butterflies and moths to pollinate a lot of our crops. And without that, 60% or more of our food supply would not be available to us, and we don't have the ability to pollinate those plants. The insects are evolved to do that, and they do that most efficiently. And with native pollinators, you actually don't really need to manage for them. You just need to plant the plants that they like, and they'll come, and they'll help you out. So it's really a big boon to farmers and other people who want increased pollination in their own farms and gardens to be able to provide this habitat and get the maximum result from minimum input.
Fantastic. I really appreciate your, as always, articulate and thorough on this show, really taking us through the issues and giving us opportunities to engage. I want to thank you so much for the call-in. And I will just ask you one last question. Are the UMBs folks still meeting on Sundays on campus if people wanted to get involved in a more sustained way with that organization? I know there's so much interesting going on. They got a grant to put bees on campus that we're working with campus managers to figure out how to do safely and happily. And there's just so, it's such a dynamic organization. Are you still meeting on Sundays? What's happening with that?
We do still meet on Sundays. Our first meeting of the academic year is this Sunday at the campus farm directly after the planting. So if someone comes to the planting, they can just stay after and we'll have refreshments. And we'll be talking about all the exciting plans coming up for this year, anything from arts and crafts to putting in some more hives and preparing those for winter. People can learn all about how to keep their own bees, but also how to make a difference in our local community to build a more resilient economy based on local food. But you can email umichbees@umich.edu for more information.
Beautiful. We'll put that in our blog after the broadcast today, Pete. And good luck with it. Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much.
Of course. I want to take us back to some tunes because we've got so many great ideas in our head right now. We need a minute to just groove out and think it through. And when we come back, we'll hear a little more about the work on food issues in Detroit. I'll talk a little bit about internships in Kenya for my students this summer. And we'll keep this conversation going. But let's listen to a tune.
Right.
Da 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 da. Yeah, love that. Al Jarreau with Teach Me Tonight. I know it just takes your whole blood pressure down a notch, even though it kind of takes the sting out of exams to think of it that way. The sky is a blackboard high above you. I love that tune. It's Rebecca Harden with Danya and Pearl and Becca and Nat in the studios at WCBN for It's Hot in Here. 88.3 FM, here we are talking about environmental work and learning. And I think Nat is on the mic. He does not feel like he has finished asking us questions about the extra classroom learning that all of us did and the work we did outside of campus on issues this summer. Am I right, Nat?
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, Becca, you mentioned that you were working in Detroit mm-hmm. at Food Lab this summer and really piqued my curiosity. So I'd love to hear some more about the work you were doing.
Yeah, excellent. So yeah, I was working with Food Lab. It's a nonprofit organization based out of Detroit. They're actually working out of the Green Garage, which is a wonderful community of businesses. The Green Garage, for anyone who has not been there, is an old retrofitted car showroom. And there's currently 55 businesses.
No way.
55 businesses working out of the same space. They have a garden on the roof. And for a building of its size, it's operating on 10% of the energy that a building of similar size would be operating in. So that's the kind of environment that I was working with. It was wonderful.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Reminds me of smaller scale things here in Ann Arbor, like mm-hmm. the filling station on Liberty that's been converted to a produce station of sorts. Mm-hmm. Really exciting to see those automotive infrastructures get put to new mm-hmm. use in this state as we go greener and greener.
Right. And it's a wonderful way to convert old resources, which is similar to what was happening in the shared use kitchens that I was working helping to promote in the city of Detroit, so that multiple entrepreneurs with limited resources, those from a minority or financially troubled backgrounds, can get in and can start a business and can be entrepreneurial in that sense, when traditionally it would cost way too much money to open a kitchen.
So that's a really interesting thing then about Food Lab. They're not introducing new initiatives. They are tapping people who've been cooking for their communities for mm-hmm. years, maybe, right?
Yeah. So Food Lab is a network of businesses. So they represent businesses from all food spectrums. Like I said, bakers to, there's a gentleman who's opening a business in Detroit called Sustainable Sushi. And he's basically converting old barge crates into a restaurant. That's what he's going to be using to assemble his restaurant. So that's in progress.
Okay, that is very cool.
it was pretty awesome. He wasn't a person working out of a shared kitchen, but it was an excellent experience. And Food Lab definitely operates on the principle of seeing what entrepreneurs need on a year-by-year basis. They vote on what is going to be the driving force. What are they going to be focusing on that year? And that's what I had the opportunity to engage in.
I love that just in the sort of the world classroom around the table today, we've got this kind of grassroots neighborhood level entrepreneurial emphasis. We've got municipal planning and learning emphasis. We've got an international institute that's tracking trends worldwide as it links to those other levels. I mean, we kind of have it all going on. Nat, do you have more questions?
Well, I know we haven't really heard, or I haven't heard from Danya yet. And, you know, Danya, I saw you around D.C. this summer, but I'd love to.
Yeah, so I was in D.C. contributing to knowledge, as I like to call it. but I was working for the U.S. Green Building Council within the Department of the Center for Green Schools. The U.S. Green Building Council, they do the green building certifications, which is really exciting. But I focused on actually studying organizational change in organizations, businesses, higher education, schools. The U.S. Green Building Council has a really, really amazing partnership with the Harvard School of Public Health, where they're trying to expand research and opportunities for professionals that are interested in becoming sustainability leaders. So I was trying to contribute to that knowledge by studying sustainability professionals in school districts, K-12 school districts.
Danya, can you describe some of the changes that you are seeing, that shift in either the educational system towards more sustainability focus?
Yeah, so particularly for the Center for Green Schools, I thought that it was appropriate to study these professionals in school districts. And what we're seeing now is that administration superintendents and community members, board members, school board members are noticing that they have these multiple needs that they have to meet, teaching their students about sustainability, about going green, about the environment, so to enable them to be leaders in the future. And in addition, these school districts are strapped for resources. So sustainability is being looked at, it's being seen as a means to reduce costs, to make operations more efficient. And the issue is that there aren't already experts within school districts to manage these types of issues. So they're looking at kind of the way businesses, a lot of corporations have looked at hiring or using some internal staff to become the sustainability team or the chief sustainability officer, sustainability manager. School districts are looking to do the same thing. And there's a right now the Center for Green Schools has about an 80 to 90 network of professionals that are already serving these roles within school districts. And they're really bringing school districts into the 21st century, making them more innovative, efficient, sustainable organizations, and altering a very, very, very traditional sector to become more adaptive to the changes that are going to be happening within the next few decades.
That is so exciting, and it mirrors a lot of what we've seen on our campus in recent years with this kind of student activism catalyzing and encountering upper-level administrative changes that put sustainability at the center of our curricula and of our campus operations. Everything from our computing to our food systems is, you know, both pushing and pulling itself towards better sustainability. And I think to see that at K-12 levels is really exciting. But I don't know, how did you feel about it walking away from the summer? It sounds like a big challenge as well as a big opportunity.
Yeah, that was... So my research was focusing on, you know, figuring out what these people do and what their challenges are, what they perceive as their successes in this position. But mostly, it's kind of what you guys are talking about, sharing the information. You know, a sustainability professional in a school district needs to communicate with people who are educators, with people who are financial officers, with people who are accountants. So it's really, really important that the person gets over this barrier of, you know, communication and lack of understanding. So that was really the main issue that they were encountering. But even then, even with that particular barrier, these individuals are so innovative and so incredibly passionate that just kind of trumps everything. It's just so exciting, especially seeing what you guys are so excited about what you're doing. All of this energy is really, really contagious, which is exciting.
Well, that's a fabulous backdrop to my next announcement, which is that we've been contacted by the staff here at WCBN, which itself is a really exciting team. I don't know how many of our listeners out there have had a hand in broadcasting 24/7, but it takes a lot of teamwork to keep a station on the air 24/7. And in these early weeks of the semester, we're always ironing out our schedules and getting new people integrated into that team. Because there may be a little delay with the next show, we may have a few extra minutes to finish up our conversations today. So I look forward to taking us just past that 1 o'clock hour. But while I make that announcement, I want to flag this amazing team at this radio station, working with very limited means to do really innovative and unparalleled freeform radio. It has been such a privilege over the years to collaborate. And I want to just also remind us that every single one of you around this table has really sort of ended on that note of excitement about the people with whom you worked and the way that collaborative work and teamwork makes things possible, amplifies our efforts. And, you know, this show, of course, is an example of that. But I do want to, and Nat, I don't know whether you had that same feeling about WRI and how you came away from the summer and as far as feeling like the possibility for institutional partnerships. And you talked a lot about helping, you know, WRI is an institution trying to help people in cities understand their connections to rural areas better. And also to, you know, super local institutions like WRI itself. But did you have that same feeling of optimism about the efforts, not just the outcomes, but the level of energy going into connecting and learning?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, I think kind of that optimism came from two sources. You know, I think on one hand, I really saw people confronting the challenges that they're facing and that we're all facing, you know, in our communities, but also globally, in a very honest and direct and clear-headed way, but not in a despairing way, in a way that really took those challenges but put them in the context of the strengths and the assets, both human and natural, that we have to use to really meet those challenges and move forward and kind of create a common vision of what we want our world and our communities to look like. So I felt very optimistic.
It's so good to hear. I have to say, you know, we all hear so much doom and gloom about environmental issues. And I think it's just really a great reminder that lots of folks are working together pretty hard and each in their corners. Certainly my own interns, the folks working with my collaborative team in Kenya this summer, They were in a really interesting position. One of them, Leon Espera, is a student at the School of Public Health here at the University of Michigan, and the other, Katie Brown, is a student at the School of Environment. This is the second or third summer that we've fielded mixed teams of public health and environment students in East Africa to look at disease transmission between wildlife and livestock and humans, and thinking about how land management and the politics of land use might mean some people are at more risk from diseases than others. And we need to get a grasp of that if we want to have good public health outreach, good veterinary outreach, good food security, and at the same time, good state policies about who gets to use land how in a really rapidly growing economy like Kenya. So it was really, you know, the big sort of policy term for this umbrella people use now is One Health, meaning animals, humans, environmental health, they're connected. And we are not yet in the classroom smart enough about training those different kinds of experts to talk to each other and work together. You know, you go to university here or in Kenya, you either become a veterinary or a human health expert. Well, we need people that are at least able to learn with each other across those boundaries, break down those silos, to quote Nobel laureate Eleanor Ostrom, who did a talk here a few years ago about how natural science and social science, animal health and human health, these things have got to come together. And we cannot keep silos in our educational system that prevent that collaborative work from going forward. And so Katie and Leon, bless their hearts, they spent the summer trudging across this remarkable volcanic landscape out on the coast of Lake Victoria in Kenya, which is a region largely inhabited by Luo speakers. That's Barack Obama's background, for those of you who may not know. And they were really thinking about how, you know, when it rains, volcanic rock fills up with water and then mosquitoes breed. And, you know, there are lots of environmental determinants to high malaria and disease rates there and how to tackle that and keep both animals and people healthy. And I think working with the University of Nagasaki in Japan and the International Livestock Research Institute in Nairobi and several different levels of the Kenyan government, from the Ministry of Scientific Research to the National Laboratories, was a real eye-opener for them about how, you know, a single goal, like less malaria or healthier goats, means six different, you know, layers of institutions needing to get along and make their wheels sort of turn together. And that coupled, you know, challenge of understanding the health challenges, but then also understanding the institutional challenges, that's what you get when you walk out of the classroom, right? When you go out on these internships and you get into engaged learning. So that's really why I think a lot of us today wanted to start with the What Did You Do This Summer show. Because the truth is, it's as simple as going somewhere cool and meeting new people, but it's as complex as figuring out how we got to meet the big challenges of our times. And that's always interesting. I think that we should cut to one more tune, perhaps, and take a little minute to think about both the refreshing travel we've done and the big challenges we're all trying to meet in our work and our education. And with any luck, this will be our outro into another broadcasting experience here at WCBN-FM. If not, we'll be back. Thanks, Tex.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. Fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom's ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You
You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your books. Gee, but the teacher don't know how mean she looks. Soon as 3 o'clock rolls around, you finally lay your burden down. Close up your books, get out of your seat. Down the halls and into the street. Up to the corner and round the bend. Right to the juke joint you go in. Drop the coin right into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. You've been wanting to dance, feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go. Something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go. Hail, hail, rock and roll. Deliver me from the days of old. Long live rock and roll. The beat of the drums.
Welcome back to It's Hot in Here, 88.3 WCBN-FM, Ann Arbor. It's the Talk and Tunes show about going green with a groove on our local community and student-run radio station, trying to build those bridges out from the classroom to the real world. And we've been talking today about the experiences that our new hosts on this show and several of our guests have had stepping out of away from the library and the books and the computers and into working relationships in real initiatives on the ground. I wonder, Becca, Donia, Nat, you guys have all made a really smashing success of your summer internships. I want to remind our listeners that we will have links to the Center for Green Schools, to the Food Lab in Detroit, to the World Resources Institute, to NOAA, where Pearl worked. And if any of you wants to learn more about some of the organizations you've heard about from all of us, the One Health, you know, International Global Health links, we'll have all those on the blog after this show. But in the meantime, what would you say to a first-year student or an undergraduate wanting to know more about how to make this kind of thing happen for themselves? How do you get one of these internships? How do you get it all together and make it go?
Research.
Persistence.
So, yeah, I can speak to that a little bit. I actually got my internship through Rackham Graduate Studies, the School of Rackham, and my internship was through a program called the Arts of Citizenship. So any listeners out there, especially students interested in taking your academic experience and seeing how it applies to real-world initiatives, I strongly recommend looking into that program. They don't only do environmental stuff, but they also do a lot of work. They do a lot of work in Detroit, a lot of work with social science-based organizations. But basically, that fellowship allows you to pair your academic work with an organization or an entity that's in the professional world working on similar initiatives.
Very great resource. Rackham has all kinds of fabulous little pockets and pools of, mm-hmm. of funding and support for taking your education where you want it to go. I think that's a great suggestion. Mm-hmm. What about the others of you? Any thoughts about how you managed to get it all together and turn it into really great working and learning experience?
So my experience was very different from Becca's. I was pretty strategic about it. I knew what I wanted to learn this summer and the city that I wanted to work in. So I just researched organizations and I The U.S. Green Building Council was always one that interested me, particularly the Center for Green Schools with my background in education. So I looked through their staff, I looked through their bios, what they were interested in, I compared it to my interests, I contacted Anissa Baldwin-Metzger, who is the K-12 coordinator at the Center for Green Schools, told her that I was looking for work and this is what I was interested in, and we went off from there and I basically made my own internship, which was complicated. It worked out well enough. It took a lot of time, but because I did that, I was able, along with Nat, also to get the Sussman funding for my internship. So that was really, really beneficial in order to live in a huge city like Washington, D.C.
Okay, now what's the Sussman funding?
Great question. So the Sussman Foundation basically funds environmental internships to about 9 or 10 different universities. And here at SNRE, first year, second year students that are in a 3-year program can have the opportunity to apply for this type of funding in order to fund an internship that might not be paid.
Okay, and let me just remind our listenership that the SNRE is the School of Natural Resources and Environment here at the University of Michigan. We work really closely with the program in environment, which is the undergraduate parallel program, and with a lot of other graduate schools in partnership, but that is that acronym, SNRE. Yes. And so Sussman sounds like a fantastic resource for students that want, and it's tough because on some levels, even while you're sitting in the classroom desperately trying to make sure your notes are good and you figured out the C-Tool site and you know when the exam is going to be, you also have to be thinking about 6 months from now, 5 months from now, 4, 3, 2, 1, what am I going to do this summer, right?
Yeah.
And it goes so fast. That school year goes so fast. But it is good to keep your eye on that prize. One nice thing about being at Michigan is we have these long summers. They start in very early May, and you really have 4 months almost to do what you need to do. Nat, how did you come to your internship?
Yeah, so I think I kind of had an easy story. I found out about it through an alum and was able to kind of leverage that relationship and the relationship he had with my advisor. I think Danya's advice was really good, though. You know, definitely use those, the kind of connections that I used, kind of as they arose, if you can, and if they arise for you in the right way. But be proactive. And
that's really important.
Exactly.
And know what you want to try to do in the world, because it is the case on so many of the kinds of topics that interest us that nobody's created that job yet. Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing about your, you know, you're talking not about like an internship for a job you might want to have. You're talking about an internship with people who, like yourself, are trying to create new kinds of jobs for a new kind of world. And that is so exciting, but it's so risky.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, you won't know what you're getting yourself into.
And I think that's where making those connections really comes into play. People that are on that, I guess, leading edge can help you brainstorm what a potential internship would be.
Yeah, and I think just being really clear about the values that you have and how those values inform the work you want to do helps so much in presenting who you are and really, you know, helping you connect with people and find opportunities that will get you to the place you want to be in. So
exactly.
That really resonated with me.
I think a lot of us have that experience of, on the one hand, wanting to learn skills and train in concepts that are time-honored and have come down to us from, you know, previous generations of working and thinking people. And on the other hand, we want to try to put them together in new ways, or, you know, what I guess consultants would call think outside the box. And I think it's a balance, right, between respecting the legacies of information and skills that you need in the world and trying to make up some new ones. I think all of us on the radio show are familiar with that feeling of, wait, why don't we have better conversations that are both real time and digital on these issues? And trying to invent that as we go has been a real wonderful experience. I think that making up your job as you go along can be a very stressful thing, but it can also be the thing that and gives you the most fulfillment and gives you the most clarity about why you do what you do every day. So I commend each and every one of you guys for coming in here and sharing that experience with us and with our listeners today. I do want to encourage folks to check out our blog and look for more information from these fabulous hosts and guests. I want to thank all our callers. We had so many calls in today that were just fantastic. And we'll be here week after next at noon with yet another broadcast on the It's Hot in Here radio show. going out to Ann Arbor and the world and all the communities in between right here in Michigan. Thanks to those at the EJ Summit and at U of MB's for your calls in. And everybody have a fantastic weekend. Thanks for listening.